Every year at Christ College, which is the Presbyterian Bible College in Sydney, students are put into mission teams. And then they're sent off to various churches around the state to get some hands-on ministry experience. So year one for Ian, on my very first college mission trip, when I could have gone to all sorts of exotic locations, I went all the way up to Gosford. I met Leslie in Gosford Hospital, where I was getting some experience at hospital visiting. And when I walked into Leslie's ward, I noticed she was in the bed closest to the window, which was quite a large window and actually provided a lovely view of the neighbouring parkland. But when I looked at Leslie, she just seemed to be staring out of the window in a boring sort of way. So in my attempt as an icebreaker, I said, "It must be quite nice having such a lovely view to look at." Well, her response was nearly enough to put me off ever visiting hospitals again. She said, "I can't see the view because I'm blind." She said it quite matter-of-factly, but I didn't think there was any bitterness or anger in the way she responded to me. So I guess I put my head down a bit. I noticed there was a folder sitting in her lap and realised that it was actually a braille book, which she'd been reading, as they do with their fingers. Well, I felt like I'd well and truly put my foot in my mouth. My career as a hospital chaplain was over. But Leslie didn't seem to mind, bless her, of what I'd just done, or what I felt like I'd just done. So a bit more of her story. So she didn't kick me out of the ward, we chatted. And at this point, it turns out she'd been in hospital for 6 weeks. Because of all things, she'd fallen into a cactus bush. And that had given her a really badly infected leg that just wasn't healing. And as we talked further, I learned some other things about her life. It turned out that she'd become blind 3 years earlier in an accident involving caustic soda. She recovered from that to the extent that she learned to read Braille, and she got on with her life, with her husband and kids. But after the incident which blinded her, in fact, about 18 months later, Leslie said she woke up one morning and discovered that she couldn't hear her husband talking to her, and subsequent tests revealed that she'd lost most of her hearing overnight. And the doctors said that her hearing would probably further deteriorate and she may very well lose it altogether. So, there's Leslie, blind and deaf. Well, as I sat there and listened, I thought, this poor woman has been through more in the last 3 years than most of us would go through in a lifetime. How does she cope so well? Leslie continued saying that when she was growing up, her father had worked at the Maralinga nuclear testing site in South Australia, and that many of her brothers and sisters had since died. I suspect that was the result of the radiation. Nonetheless, Leslie had 6 children, including 2 sets of twins. But 4 of her children died from medical issues when they were very young, which left her with just 2 surviving children. And then within the last week, while she was in hospital, Leslie found out the toddler of a close friend of hers had died when her father had accidentally reversed a car over her. And for Leslie, that was particularly upsetting because it was only recently that she had resuscitated the baby after she'd fallen into a swimming pool. And so there are some sort of postcards out of Leslie's life, and that brought us to the present, where, as I say, she'd been in hospital for 6 weeks with a leg that wouldn't heal. Skin grafts were refusing to take, and the infection was resisting the strongest antibiotics they could throw at her. So how had she coped with so much heartache? How could she still seem so together in the face of so much hurt and pain? You could understand it if she wanted to ask, well, where's God when bad things happen? And she's not alone. It's a question people have asked for thousands of years. People just like you and me. People in the house next to you. People in your workplace. People in your social club. where is God when bad things happen? Because for one reason or another, suffering and tragedy has struck and wrenched lives apart at the seams. A bushfire, a drought, a flood, a child killed in a cruel accident, a loved one claimed by a ravenous disease. Things that just seem so unfair. Things that cause us to ask difficult questions. And rightly so, I think. Where's God when things go wrong? What right have we got to celebrate Christmas when there's so much pain and suffering in the world? How can we possibly acknowledge at Christmas a God who allows all this to happen? Well, let me tell you why. Because in Christmas, we see God's answer to these questions. Because in Christmas, God involves himself with our problems. You see, the God of the Bible, the God of Christmas, didn't just sit back, put his feet up, yawn. He cared so much about our mess that he came to us and became one of us. And that's the reason why John 3:16 is rightly one of the most well-known verses in the Bible. For God so loved the world that he gave his only son. That's the message of Christmas. That's the message of the best Christmas gift ever. And there's a short phrase that sums it up. It's only three words in English and two words in Hebrew, if you're so interested. But it has its origins in the Old Testament prophet Isaiah. And if you won't notice, it's Isaiah chapter 7, verse 14. We've heard these three words 1,000 times before in Christmas carols and seen it hundreds more times on Christmas cards. It's probably so familiar to us that we pass over it without really thinking about it. And we miss the enormity of what this simple phrase is saying. So I want to read for you again from Matthew chapter 1, verses 20 to 23. But after he had considered this, so that's Joseph, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream and said, Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take Mary home as your wife, because what is conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit. She will give birth to a son, and you are to give him the name Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins. All this took place to fulfill what the Lord had said through the prophet. The virgin will be with child and will give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel, which means three words, God with us. So Emmanuel, the word Emmanuel, is Hebrew for God with us. And think about Joseph and Mary. What a great comfort those words would have been to them over the next few years as they traipsed all over the countryside. First to Bethlehem with the events of that amazing Christmas night. Then receiving visits from foreign wise men with extravagant gifts. Then, after that, chased out of Judah all the way to Egypt by bloodthirsty soldiers. God with us would have strengthened this little family wherever they went. And as they came to terms with how life had changed, and as they wondered whether life would ever get back to normal, and as they waited in Egypt until Herod died, and they could return to Israel. Emmanuel wouldn't have been an empty phrase to Joseph and Mary. But I think it rolls off our tongues too easily. If we really understood it, it would knock our socks off. Emmanuel is about the greatest come down in history. That's what Christmas is. When God the Son condescended to become man, the God who made the universe became a baby who couldn't possibly survive on his own, dependent on his mum for everything. The God who was everywhere at once became a baby starting his life in a dark corner of a smelly stable in the backwater village of an insignificant nation. God the Son, who enjoyed intimate and complete and eternal fellowship with his Father, put all that aside and came to his own people. But his own people rejected him. The one whose home was heaven, who owned everything, wandered around in the dust with no home. Even foxes and birds have homes. But Jesus had less. and his rejection by men climaxed in his death. And it was there that even his father turned his back on him, the most unbearable hurt of all. That's what it costs God to be with us. Giving money is easy. Giving yourself is costly. There's an old fable about a king of Persia long ago. He cared greatly for his people and desired only what was best for them. And so he would often disguise himself as a poor man and walk through the city observing everyone. One day he visited the public baths, which for those who couldn't afford their own baths, this was where they washed themselves and washed their clothes. This was where the real people were, his true citizens, not the politician in his court. But the baths wasn't where he was stopping today. The water that filled the baths was heated by a furnace in the cellar. So the king made his way to that dark, damp, hot place to sit with that poor man who tended the fire all by his lonesome, a bloke that no one gave a second thought. But this man in the cellar shared his simple food with his visitor, and the king befriended him in his loneliness. And day after day, the king went to visit the man, and he became attached to this stranger because he came to where he was. Then one day the king revealed his true identity, and the king expected that the man would ask him for a gift. Instead, this simple man looked into the king's face and said, "You left your palace and your glory to sit with me in this dark place, to eat my ordinary food, and to care about what happened to me. On others you bestow rich gifts, but to me you have given yourself." You see, this is what God's done for us. He's a king who hasn't simply given us rich gifts. He's given us himself, which makes it the most precious and costly gift of all. Christmas is God's answer to those who ask, "Where's God when bad things happen?" The man in that hot furnace room could have complained about his lot in life, could have blamed the king for his economic policies, or his wasteful, extravagant spending, or for not being interested in the little people. But once the king had visited him, he knew for certain that the king cared, because the king had done more than give him a new job. He'd given himself. Think about Joseph and Mary. They could have blamed God for the inconvenience of the Roman census right when Mary was due to give birth, or for the bad hygiene of the stable, or the danger of Herod's soldiers hunting down their son Jesus, or the difficulty of their escape to Egypt. But instead, God was with them. Emmanuel, God with us. It's really what separates Christianity from every other religion in the world, because only in Christianity does God approach humankind. Every other philosophy and religion teaches that God can be approached by humankind, that there's something we can do, or become, or have, which can bring us closer to God. Things like good works or meditation. But it's only Christianity where God reaches down to humankind and turns our expectations about religion and good works and merit upside down. And this is what Emmanuel, God with us, means. But I hasten to add there's more to it than just nice feelings of solidarity, of warm fuzzies and friendly gestures, or even of God playing a trick on humankind, wasting a few years by hanging out with us for a while. That's the king and the furnace keeper story. And it's more than God showing us a better way. You know, just be nice to each other, like me. Give each other gifts, like I have. And everything will be all right. That's not it at all. Because Christmas isn't just about God with us. He came to do something for us. The angel had another name for this baby. It's there in verse 21, Matthew chapter 1. Joseph was to call him Jesus because he would save his people from their sins. So The only way to enjoy the friendship of the king is to have all our rebellion, our sin, dealt with. And that happened on the cross, which is what the rest of that famous Bible verse, John 3:16, says. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life. You see, death and separation from God are hanging over our heads. It is just punishment for those who refuse to recognise and honour him. But it's something that Jesus came to deal with. Because Christmas wasn't some easy-going hangout with the humans sort of casual affair. It was a full-on, extravagant, costly rescue mission. The rescue mission that culminated 33 years later in Jesus' torturous death on the cross. All carried out according to God's plan so that Jesus would take the punishment we deserved. So that God might offer us something we didn't deserve. Forgiveness and friendship and life. Life that received a guarantee 36 hours later when Jesus rose from the dead. The down payment for our own resurrection from death. So that's how much God cares for us, even if things go wrong in the present. And that's a great comfort. Now, some people see that bad things happening as evidence that either God isn't good, or isn't powerful enough to do anything about it, or perhaps isn't even there at all. But Christmas is God's declaration, his guarantee that despite appearances, he is good, and he does act. And one day everything will be restored and renewed. And sometimes this is the only comfort there is, which means that even when we don't understand why some things happen, we must trust the one whose hands are on the wheel. If you've ever tried jet boating in a place like the Shotover River in New Zealand, then you would understand how it can be exhilarating and scary and fun all at the same time. There are times when it feels like you're out of control and you're going to crash into a rock face at high speed. But then at the last second, the driver expertly swerves away in complete control and saves you from the impending disaster. So you put your trust in the one who's steering, even if at times it looks and feels like things are out of control. And God's the expert driver who's controlling the events of our lives. Sometimes, for reasons we don't understand, the ride is a little bumpier or a little wetter than at other times. But our trust is in the expert driver. And this is the trust which blind Leslie has. She knows what it means to be nearly swamped by life. But she also knows what it means to trust the driver. You see, the Braille book that was on her lap that she'd been reading was part of the Bible. And as I spoke with Leslie, I realised that she had a deep and real faith in God. She told me how God's love was often the only thing which kept her from falling apart. She had a sure conviction that God loved her as his child. And with everything that happened to her, all he expected from her was that she trusted him. Leslie knew she really couldn't control anything in her life anyway. And God had shown the depth of his love by sending Jesus at Christmas. And it was only in looking to him that she could make any sense of the tragedy in her life. The events of Christmas were Leslie's evidence of Emmanuel, that God was with her. And I walked out of hospital that day, having been ministered to more than I was able to minister. This morning I want to ask you if you all trust God with the trust of Leslie. Will you walk through life confident that Emmanuel, God is with you? And when you start to wonder whether God really loves you, remember the angel's message to Joseph. Jesus is God with us. That's God's declaration of love to you. And with that, I'd like to remind you what the Apostle Paul wrote concerning this in Romans chapter 8, verses 31 and 32. What then shall we say in response to this? If God is for us, who can be against us? He who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will we not also, along with him, graciously give us all things? Emmanuel, God with us. That's the message of Christmas. Reach out, invite him to be with you. Amen.